What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Savers Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Losing has to hurt more than winning. I mean, it has to mean more. It has to hurt you more. In the losing that style, you've got to hate losing more than you like winning. We've been a team since the start of the year that has had a tough time dealing with, you know, inside the game, a little bit of adversity, whether it's, you know, kind of a lucky goal at the start of the third, or, you know, we make a bad play, whether we've compounded that with we haven't had that next couple lines come out and say that ain't going to happen again.
Next attempt to reverse some of those words, obviously, tomorrow night as Carolina comes in for a, please note the start time, 6 p.m. start. Yes, it's television driven, but not by us, Marty.
18 o'clock, as we used to say it. That's probably the first military time that I remembered, like, on TV when I was a kid, because it would be the news or something at
right.
6 o'clock
yes.
or whatever. Yes. So it was always 1800. That's
1830 in Newfoundland.
That's what they did say. They always said that 1800. No, it actually was 1800. It was 1900 in the Maritimes, 1930 in Newfoundland,
yes.
because
My
it was
bad.
An hour and a half later. But yes, that was the Canadian history lesson for today. You know what's funny about the Lindy Ruff quote about you got to hate
nothing,
losing?
Nothing, actually, is my guess.
No, because, you know, we just played that alumni game against the Shorzy, you know, people or whatever. And that's the line from Shorzy
is not
the same. Is
that part of their pregame speech?
It's not from the pregame speech, but the line from Shorzy is not the same. Is that the owner, she says... They don't love to win. He goes, no, it's not that. It's that they don't hate to lose. Like, you have to hate losing more than you have to love winning. That's what Shorzy always says, because losing's got to hurt. And people are going to say, that's the same thing. I can tell you as a player, I won a game. I came back to the room, and there's guys that are like, yeah, we won. Yeah, we celebrate, right? You celebrate a playoff win. You celebrate, like, you know, a milestone win, something. But I would win a game and I'd be like, okay, what's on to the next, right? Mm-hmm. I'd lose a game. It would stay with me. Like, I wanted to see, what did I do that made it that I lost? I can't give up that goal. Can't make that play. Like, that's what hating to lose is compared to loving to win. Like, there's a difference between the two of them. And I think Lindy is trying to teach that difference to the players in the way that they need to play inside the game.
Right. And on the heels of a resounding victory over Ottawa, it was just another unexpected, maybe I shouldn't use that word, because unfortunately now they've had a half dozen games where they've had multi-goal leads disappear.
Yeah.
But it still feels unexpected in the moment when you and I are sitting there after 20 minutes on the broadcast talking about, again, like every single thing that they did right. And then you get into a window now where they're playing two games in 8 days, and almost everybody outside of Pittsburgh is soaring
yep.
up the Eastern Conference ladder, right? And it's one loss, right? Like, it now lingers because you're not in a super busy stretch this week, and everybody else stockpiled over the course of the weekend. So it's...
Can you go 5-2-1 in your 8-game segment, as you pointed out, your 5 8-game segment? Absolutely, you can go 5-2-1.
Sure.
You lost the first game, so go 5-1-1. That's doable. It's mm-hmm. not a problem. But you're right. Like, tonight in the NHL, just look at the games, right? Detroit plays. The Bruins and the Lightning play, so somebody's going to get 2 points. The Flyers and Blue Jackets play. Somebody's going to get 2 points. The Penguins are hosting the Kraken. Ottawa and the Islanders played, so somebody's got to get 2 points. There's so many of those games that are happening that Yeah, I mean, one loss kind of in a very not busy stretch for the Sabres, it really sets you back a little bit. That 2 points would have meant a lot against in the last game.
Is Ottawa, New York a bet the farm guaranteed beyond regulation game?
It should. But when usually we have a bet the farm situation, we lose the farm, so we don't have a farm to bet anymore. But I think it feels like a 3-point game in this one. It feels like, again, there could be plenty of 3-point games, which is what teams have done. There's a lot of teams that have been able to get that extra point and get that extra point and get to overtime. Montreal won 2 in overtime. They got to overtime, then they get that extra point, but still just getting there, getting a point is big.
Yeah, I mean, Suzuki's been a catalyst. Obviously, they had a slight, although again, beyond regulation hiccup against Dallas on Saturday. And then Dallas, of course, rolled over. I don't want to say rolled over, but they weren't nearly as sharp the next night when Ottawa beat them. So, and Dallas will continue along tonight as they take on Toronto to close out their trip. But back to the words of the coach and the question of the now moment for this group is, like, why can't they build off of these almost top of the league starts to games? Like, they are so good in goal differential in first periods, so good at scoring first, so good in total goals scored in first periods. What's amiss here?
I think Lindy Ruff has talked about it. In last game, he was really pushing the buttons with the amount of words that he was using about, horrendous second period, perimeter play, staying on the outside, too comfortable on the outside. And I guess this has now been for probably 3 weeks to almost a month. He was saying, like, oh, we got to get point shot traffic, chaos in front of the net. And then he kind of switched a little bit after a while, says, we got to stay away from getting the point shot. We got to get to the slot. We got to get to the middle. We have to bypass. And that's what I'm seeing now, is that everything's on the perimeter. Everything's on the outside. Get a point shot through. But good teams find the middle. Good teams attack the middle. Players that have success go to the middle. And I think that's what Lindy Ruff was talking about. And we didn't see that. So you start a game, first period, you get chances, you create off the rush, you attack, that's great. But how do you consistently produce, and how do you consistently win games and have success, is by getting to the slot, getting to the middle. And the Sabres have not done that well. And now you see that, well, teams are like, oh, we just got to take away the rush. Like Seattle is, oh man, Buffalo's coming really quick on the rush, and look at how they attack us, and they get a 2-0 lead. And if a team is adjusting on the way that they play against the rush, then all of a sudden you take all the offense away, and then the Sabres are turning puck overs and, you know, trying to create things when it's not there, and you're making it easy for the other team. That's where the problem is. That's where Lindy Ruff has talked about battle drills and 2-on-2 and getting to the middle, because he understands now that the rush chances, once they disappear, seems like the Sabres don't get enough from the slot to be able to sustain more offense in the second and third period.
Right, but those shouldn't directly correlate with extended shifts, own zone giveaways, things like that. Like, the two can be separate, right? Like, you can exist well enough defensively without, you know, not necessarily having an A game all the time offensively, right? Like, you can,
yes,
you can make it more of a low event game, correct?
Yes, and you can focus on the defensive side of things. But I think there was times this year where Lindy has been focused more on the defensive side of the game and trying to almost win games 2-1. And that really didn't work either, right? So now you're like caught in between. And do I have the team to go out there and win games 2-1, make it low event, or do I have to try to win with scoring 4? And so now you're, okay, well, let's try to win with scoring 4. How do we create more offense? How do we get that? And so I think you're kind of caught between the rock and the hard place here, because you've tried a few things now. You've evaluated and tried a few things and are still searching for the right recipe.
So then what?
Well, now it comes down to creating it.
I mean, do you keep, you know, assuming they're working their way back to health here, you know, these illnesses that go through any and all professional sports teams typically at almost this exact time of year can linger for sure. But, you know, they're honestly, they have been and are quite healthy in contrast to a number of teams. So, yes. Saying all that, like, do you again try to look for something different in your lines and pairings to maintain what you think they are, which is a rush team? But do you look for defensive conscience, posture, some, you know what I mean? Like, do you tweak to potentially take away offensive ideals from a line or pairing in a quest for a little bit of both on a line and a pair? And honestly, I'm saying this out loud, but I don't know what that would look like in the form
I don't know what that would look like, because I don't know that the roster is built in the way that you're like, all of a sudden we're going to be a shutdown team, right? And I don't know that's really what you can do with that. I think a lot of it revolves around the health of Tage Thompson. And do you want to not all of a sudden say, okay, well, Tage is going to go back to the middle? Because if you decide you want to put Tage back in the middle at some point here, being that you've gotten a little bit more rest and there's not as many games, or maybe it happens in a week from now, then, okay, well, are you going to be putting Tage and Tuck together again with maybe Peterko, who's played well with McLeod and a little bit better with McLeod and Tuck, but is that maybe where you want to go and kind of change your lineup? But if you are hoping to just keep Tage on the wing because you like the shot volume and you like how he's been able to look better from the side and coming into the net and attacking, then, well, it's going to have to be by just creating more offense. And how do you create offense? Well, you get to the middle and you win these one-on-one battles. And I think that's what it comes down to. Because you look at the Seattle game, it felt to me like this should have been cruise control. You've got that game locked up, right? You're up 2-0 and there's 30 minutes left. It's halfway into the game. You're still up 2-0. You're up 2-1 with 21 minutes left, a minute left in the second. It felt like Seattle didn't have much. You had that game under control and it fell apart. Number one, because I think the power play didn't come through in the way they needed to at the start of second and third. But two, you just gave the puck away. You made bad plays. So do you want to completely change how you're going to play because you mismanaged the puck? No, but it has to become something that doesn't happen regularly anymore, because it seems to have happened too many times.
Correct. Carolina is next. They're pretty similar to what they've been for a long period of time under Rod Brind'Amour. They almost always outshoot their opponents. They don't give up much, which tends to reflect in nice goals against average, which is top 10, but a less than nice team save percentage, because again, they don't give up many shots. So unless their goaltenders are close to perfect, they end up bearing the brunt of, I don't think we're going to see Ticker Dustin Tokarski, even though he's 4-1, 2.0, 907, coming off a very low event shutout. What was it, 13 saves the other day? 13 or 14?
I think it was 13 at the end of it. I think I saw 14 the night before, but one was taken away. Figure it out. Adjustment on the shots the next day. That's what happened.
Exactly. But I mean, we know now they stubbed their toe on Eric Staal's retirement jersey night on Sunday. They fought back. They ended up losing in overtime to Anaheim, but they still are very much the Canes we have seen and known for a long time. Like, how good are they, and what is the next new challenge here for Buffalo tomorrow?
Okay, so number one, the Carolina Hurricanes, I feel, you know, yes, they have Sebastian Aho and they have Marty Natchez. Natchez has cooled off a little
He's warmed up again. He's back to closer to – he's got 6 points in the last seven.
So. He was like a beast coming out at the start of the season, and it was great to see. I don't think that Carolina scares you with their forward individually. When you look at the board and you say, okay, Svechnikov is now playing on the third line, Jarvis, Natchez, Aho, it's like, okay – But they play a very, very structured, very, like, they lean on you for a whole game. They continue to just put you under pressure, which is what Buffalo has not been able to respond this year. When a team start leaning on you, they've fallen apart a little bit, and they've given up too much. So that's the test. I think that's why Lindy Ruff is talking so much about this, you know, inside game and this winning battles and this puck management, because you know Carolina is going to be a big game. Tomorrow at home, and you got to get that win. But Carolina does exactly at their best what Buffalo has not been able to be at their worst. So that matchup could be very problematic. But if you manage the puck, I feel like you can take advantage of that Hurricanes team.
They haven't been particularly great on the road. The Canes are a game under 500 in that regard, but obviously still very much in pursuit of the division crown and, you know, very, 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 very likely to be a playoff team once again.
You look at their goals for, goals against per game. It's very good, but who's really standing out from that group, right? That's the thing.
Well, balance, like, and that's their beauty. And it
balance
has been their
is the beauty. Like Jack Roslovic and Eric Robinson and playing top 6 minutes, right? Mm-hmm. Jordan Martinook and Jordan Staal had a hat trick just, last week.
Nobody liked Shane Gostisbehere years ago. He reworked his career, and then after the Canes lost two of their top four defensemen, he comes in and, you know, has filled a void. Like, they've done a nice job. They've found good fortune in some value signings.
100%. And, I mean, Eric Robinson with 10 goals this year, like, we saw Eric Robinson in Buffalo, and you're like, wow, like, you're getting that, and you're able to get the consistent playing out of everybody. So that's what Carolina is. That's what they are. And if Buffalo doesn't have their team game ready to go, it's not going to go well. And that's why Lindy Ruff's putting a lot of emphasis on that.
Right. And, obviously there's two this week at home before the 4-game Western trip. Pittsburgh is here on Friday. They've got their own issues with just one win in the last seven. It does feel like, an incredibly critical stretch in advance of, I don't know. It's funny, depending on where your head is at, how you look at schedules. I actually kind of love the layout of next week's road trip. It's an afternoon game on Monday, right? Like, I feel like that's advantageous and thus buys you a little bit more recovery time into the back end of back-to-backs. And let's not forget, like, back-to-backs have been a huge problem right now for this team this year, in front end and back end. So maybe because this one looks a little different in how it's laid out time-wise, and then you get back into your normal routine of day off, game Thursday in Calgary, day off, early game in Edmonton on the Saturday. It's a 2 p.m. local, 4 p.m. Eastern start time. So, I don't know. We're always trying to, you know, look at where you can take advantage of schedules, and I'm not, you know, they're obviously in no position to count anything. I still can't believe a little bit of Saturday based on what Seattle then proceeded to do, which was continue their losing ways in a miserable showing against the Red Wings the very next day on Sunday.
Yeah, no, it was not good. They gave up 3 goals in the first 4 shots and never really recovered. And we talked about Joey Decord, how important he was to their success. And Philip Grubauer goes in and did not look good. And look, your teams are going to have those type of nights. Seattle has had a lot of them of late, and the Sabres had them in a position where they should have pushed them out. They should have pushed them out by leaning on them. They should have pushed them out by making it tough on them. Mm-hmm. And instead, it went the other way. And that's why it was so frustrating for Lindy Ruff to be able to sit there after the game on Saturday and say, you know, all the quotes and all the things that he said. But if he said it to the media, he said it in the locker room, and everybody got to go home on Sunday as a day off and come back to practice on Monday thinking, well, we have practice Monday, we have practice Tuesday, we have a game Wednesday. Like, we know we're going to be working at practice. You know, I'm not saying, I hate to say back in the days, but, you know, the way that the schedule works now and the practice times and the scheduled days off, and it's all great. It's way better for the players. But after that game Saturday, like, the old mentality that Rob Ray and me, like, late 90s, early 2000 would have been bag skate on Sunday and practice Monday, Tuesday, and you're completely exhausted Wednesday, and it doesn't matter what happens Wednesday night because the message has been sent, and you get killed on Wednesday night. It changed now, but that was the type of mood Lindy was in Saturday after the game, that if they had practice Sunday, it would have been a no-puck showing. That's really what it was like 20, 30 years ago.
Don't forget the game tomorrow, 6 p.m. start. It's on TNT and WGR Sports Radio 550 as Carolina comes in. Pittsburgh is here on Friday. Your more familiar start time. It's a 7 o'clock game, and it'll be on MSG. Is Detroit, are they, who's more for real, Detroit or Montreal at this moment? Detroit's won 7 in a row. The Habs are 9-3-1.
See, the reason why I want to lean to Detroit is because I think Detroit has a better roster than Montreal, a slightly better roster, and Todd McLellan now has made a big difference in, you know, the changes in Detroit. I heard some players talking about how, you know, they're not afraid to lose anymore. Like, it's almost like they were playing afraid to lose early in the season, but McLellan's come in and changed their approach, and they're not afraid to lose. They're playing to win, and it's
so he purposely tanked his first game. You guys can handle losing.
You guys are terrible, but we can handle losing. Don't be afraid to getting blown out like you did in the first game. But no, I want to say Detroit to me is a team that is probably better than Montreal.
It's a coin flip, I would say, because with the Habs 9-3-1, they've been obviously led by Suzuki and Caulfield, but they've had incredible contribution and goal from Jakub Dobish, who's 3-0. And honestly, you've been a fan of Montembeau for a while. Their overall numbers aren't going to paint him or their defense in the nicest light, but the point, it's because their sample size is bigger than what we're focused on right now, which is just their last 13 games. So they have found a way. The Detroit thing is amazing and, again, unsurprising. Like, you have to have the top players lead the way. Oh, look, Pat Kane and Alex DeBrincat are riding the longest point streaks in the NHL right now. Seven gamers, right? Like, what decade is this?
Chicago?
I know, that's the thing, right? So,
well, that's why they got them. That's why they were that's what they were hoping. And look, you know, look at Lucas Raymond. Look at Larkin playing better. I mean, that's
well, those guys I would say have been consistently there, but they don't get talked about because it's like they were almost on an island. It's like there's only so much they can do. And you talk about, you know, being afraid to lose. I think Larkin, for sure, was probably at that point, like, oh my gosh, like, what more can I do here? I'm afraid to make a mistake because who else is going to care? You know, and Dylan went through a 15-game goalless drought. And now Casper has also endured that, obviously, much further down the lineup, but still high hopes as a young player. And this is stuff that we talk about a lot. Like, okay, you're clearly talented enough to be in the NHL. You have to add to the bottom line of success here. And now Casper is in a better spot because Kane and DeBrincat look like Kane and DeBrincat, and it provides the proper balance. And, you know, obviously the Sabres, one example of that would be Yuri Kulik, right? Like, you can't just expect him to come in and push the team forward, right? He had a couple of good moments before being injured. I'm just saying, this is my long way of saying, like,
no,
obviously.
I'll tell you this. I didn't like the way the Detroit Red Wings and Steve Yzerman built this team because I felt he brought in a lot of older guys and guys that were like, yeah, you know, where are you going with JT Compher? Where are you going with Andrew Kopp? Where are you going with, you know, like Joe Valeno and Tyler Motte or whatever? But the little bit older, more experienced guys have brought in stability, I feel, in that lineup, right? The Ben Sherratt brought in a little bit stability, even though he's, you know, Ben Sherratt, whatever. But it's that age difference has made that age gap has made a difference in Detroit, I think, in them being able to flip it a little bit this year.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think all of your projected role players appear to be more successful when your best players are taking on 100%. The expected responsibility, right? So now Detroit has, remember,
rising tides lifts all boats, right? That's what it is. Your best players, if they perform, all of a sudden your supporting staff feels like they're just rising with everybody else.
Everybody starts raving about, boy, what a good fourth, fifth, and sixth defenseman you have. Yeah, well, that's because the guys up front are now no longer being victimized in a shot volume way the way the Red Wings were the first 3 months. Remember how historically bad they were getting outshot basically 31-21 most nights and some nights not getting to 20. Well, guess what? That has flipped now under Todd McClellan. They have a higher shot volume and their power play's running at 50%. Yeah. 50.
It was bad. It was terrible.
Like their penalty kill was atrocious, but but
Shane anyway. Made sure she pointed that out many, many times on our show how the Islanders and the Red Wings penalty kill were like in the 60% range. And it was like, how can you, that if there's one thing coaching is supposed to do is when it comes to special teams, especially the penalty kill, you should be able to teach the penalty kill and have the right structure and right system and all of that. And your penalty kill is at 60%. That's what basically cost Derek Lalonde his job in Detroit. And his you know, penalty kill mostly was just atrocious.
The PK is on a little uptick under McClellan, I believe. I think it's around 70%. So when you couple that with a power play that is an absolute juggernaut right now, more often than not, you're winning the special teams battle. Buffalo hopes
PDO
to do that.
PDO you talked about the other day. That's the... PDO? That's what it is.
Oh, the PDO, right? The save percentage and shooting percentage.
The save percentage and shooting percentage has gone up for Detroit, too.
Yeah. Well, that's an interesting thing you bring up here, is it's not like they've had all-world goaltending since McClellan took over. They've had ongoing health issues, right? Yeah. So therefore, a lack of consistency to a certain extent, but they're able to outscore some of their deficiencies right now. And that takes us back to a place that, you know, again, when you're looking at how Buffalo is starting games, it's surprising that they're not being able to continue outscoring opponents in the back half of games because they look so sharp and so crisp to start these games.
And the questions last game a lot were revolving around the mental side of the game. And maybe we can touch on that a little bit after, because I find it like it's really hard for players to put it into words, how your psyche goes sometimes after one mistake, two mistakes, how you adjust and you're being asked and it feels like you're not answering a question. But that is probably the biggest thing when you look at games unraveling after good starts is that aspect of the game that's really hard to put your finger on.
We'll take a quick break before we do. A reminder that you have an opportunity right now to bid on game-worn home Royal jerseys from this season, and you can own these one-of-a-kind piece of Sabres merchandise by going to sabres.com/auction today. It is Buffalo and Carolina at KeyBank tomorrow. Again, note the early start time. It's a 6 p.m. start. We're back after this on Sabres Live.